for someone to post something once they're out and be like, look at how fine I am.
Yeah.
Don't I look really fine? Here I am with my group of friends, all of us fine. And...
my love for you is gold, not blue.
Hello, welcome back to Under Our Roof.
Touching my ear.
It's all right, let me read that. I didn't know I was touching your ear. I thought I was just stretching my arm. Okay.
You feel an ear at the end of your hand?
I did, but then I was already talking. No, I was already talking, so I wanted to like keep it professional.
Yeah, I'm keeping this in.
Okay.
My love for you is constant and new. No matter the change or the age, as we both get older, my love.
Hello, welcome back to Under Our Roof. I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Elizabeth Holmes.
I knew you were going to say that.
From Theranos. My friends, if you don't know who Elizabeth Holmes is, she is an alleged fraudster, to put it mildly. At one point in time, she was considered to be the first... like woman billionaire or something, or the self-made definitely. Is that Kylie Jenner? Am I confusing these two people?
A few things. Apparently, but Kylie was never a billionaire,
right?
But also, there's
but also
women
so was Elizabeth wasn't either. Elizabeth
I mean,
Holmes
she,
wasn't.
Just because you stole the money doesn't mean you're not a billionaire.
Oh no, you're so right. Why, that's so funny. Yeah, that's true. I mean, maybe she was a billionaire. She got a lot of people to invest, but it was a fake company. This is, please just watch a documentary about this.
What's it called?
It's
docu?
Bloodline.
No, that's Bloodline. The show with Kyle Chandler.
The blood. What was the name?
Like Bad
the bloody,
Blood.
No, the Bloody Countess. True Blood.
That is not the name.
It's something.
Okay.
It's a blood lady. It's
the blood lady.
First of all, the blood lady. Tell me that's not an incredible title for okay. any documentary about Elizabeth Holmes. She said that she could find every single disease in your body with like a prick of blood. Like that's what she advertised. But she didn't know how to do that. And she apparently like never even passed a science class or something. And like all her professors were just side-eyeing the fact that she was going on all these Forbes lists and like advertised this like very fraudulent business or idea. Or what was it? Like a, it was these little blood.
It was like a blood test.
Yeah, but okay. They're like, they looked like little pills or something. And she would hold them up and yeah. be like, this is like the Theranos way or something.
Her trial is coming up and our friend was tweeting about it, which is part of why this is coming up in our lives right now. The documentary has been out for a long time, like at least a year.
Yeah.
And honestly, you're in for a treat if you haven't seen
yeah. it. Yeah. I hope I didn't spoil it
if you're
by
into
saying the fraud part.
Well, that's obvious. If you're into stories of like girl bosses gone wrong, then this is going to be right up your alley.
Wait a second. Netflix, make that a genre of documentary.
Yeah.
Like, you know how they have like strong female lead? I want a genre of girl bosses gone wrong. Every time I make a good point, I feel like that's when the sirens go off. And that's how I know that this is a simulation that I'm on the wrong side of. You know what I mean? It's like in the Truman Show. They're like, she's getting too close. But I stand by what I said. Girl Bosses Gone Wrong is an incredible genre for a documentary series or something like that. Or like a genre of offerings from any streaming service. That's free. You take that one, Netflix and Hulu, avid listeners of this podcast, Disney Plus, I'm sure you are not listening because we have parted ways. And I'm trying to build fences here, but... Or wait, am I trying to...
Bridges, not fences. Oh, right.
I don't know what I'm trying to do at this point in my life. But that's something that we were talking about because this is Under Our Roof.
We're inviting you in to the conversations we're having at home, however disjointed and weird they might be.
Exactly. And this evening it was Elizabeth Holmes, the Blood Countess Lady of Silicon Valley with her fraudulent idea. She goes back into trial on in August because she's pregnant. So they were honestly, like, oh, like, no, we'll wait.
A girl boss move. You're going to trial. You're being indicted on 12 counts of fraud. Oh, I'm pregnant. It's too bad. Can't do it. No can do, sorry. Time for like, me just... to go out on maternity leave from my life.
Time for me. I'm sorry, I can't go
girl
to
boss.
I can't go to jail. I'm on maternity leave. I can't have done the illegal crime. I was on maternity leave. Unfortunately, your window passed, my friend. I now have a child in my care. And I'm going to care for that child, unlike the thousands of people who were harmed by her fraudulent business. Okay, let's move on from Elizabeth Holmes and that situation to another legal matter that is front of mind under our roof. Today was the day that Britney Spears addressed the court for the first time in, I believe, 2 years, and the first time seemingly this openly and specific about the conditions and the parameters of her conservatorship, which she outlined as traumatic, as abusive. And she basically spoke before the court today and said that she wants out. And if you are on the internet at all, it's like all that anyone has been wanting to talk about today. On this show, we have something that perhaps you might be interested in, which is a legal perspective. So I asked Lizzie if you would maybe share your thoughts on the legal situation, because I know for me it's very confusing, and perhaps you have some guidance on how we can understand the conservatorship or like what is going on right now.
Okay, you've hyped me up a bit too much, but okay. This is somewhat intentional. Because, like, not the hyping up, but the my
I do lack, love to hype you up.
I know.
Yeah.
My lack of real knowledge on this is kind of the reason why I'm willing to talk about it. Because if you listen to this podcast for any length of time, you probably notice I do not talk about being a lawyer at all. And that's very intentional because that's just a separate part of my life. And it's also a part of my life that's very regimented by rules and ethics, and I am never trying to give legal advice on this podcast. Nothing that I ever say should ever be taken as legal advice, and I'm never going to discuss like one of my cases or clients or anything like that. But this is kind of a perfect opportunity where my experience with the court system, which I do have a lot of, and specifically in LA County where this case is taking place, can maybe, I don't know, be
shed light,
shed, maybe shed light. But I don't know a lot about this case. I have not looked at the case file. I have not, like, because you can look up case records. I mean, a lot of the stuff for this particular case is sealed, but.
Well, okay. Even what does that mean, that even stuff for this case is sealed, just because they don't want the public dragging things into the press? Is that.
I don't know the basis for sealing. I just happen to have heard that things are sealed. My guess would just be because it is a conservatorship, so there's somebody involved who lacks legal capacity and is treated basically like a minor for purposes of the law.
Right.
So information about people whose legal rights are diminished, their information would be redacted or sealed in a lot of cases, because you can you can think of it like almost like a kid. Somebody under a conservatorship is being treated as if they're, this is an approximation, but like as if they're under the age of 18. Whereas if you're under the age of 18, you can't usually like sign a lease on your own or get a credit card on your own or do any of those things on your own. You have to have a parent sign off on them. And basically conservatorship is like having that situation be the case, even though you're well of legal age, but it's like you have to have a parent. In Britney's case, it's literally her parent, but in a lot of cases it would be somebody that's not your legal
parent. A caretaker.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, from what I've been reading today, conservatorship is instated for someone who perhaps has like dementia. Apparently, it's quite common. Not quite common. It's still not a very common thing, but for like a senior citizen. So to see and hear, well, we didn't see Britney, but I have heard some of the testimony speak in court today about how she is not at a diminished capacity and how that has been very misrepresented was heartbreaking. And I think also very revelatory of how I think she's been for so long, how she was presented as like, oh, she's Britney Spears. She's out there. She couldn't handle anything. She needs this, you know?
Also, in terms of my experience and what my takeaways are on the whole thing, you had kind of asked like, what do I think will happen? And Like I just said, I am kind of intentionally not trying to brush up on the actual legal parts of this case because I'm not a representative in this case, nor am I giving like an official legal opinion on anything here. But a couple things that I observe. One is that I think it's really great that Brittany was able to say her piece and be able to speak, and I hope feel like she was being heard today. But I think people outside of the legal world might not really understand the way things work and that you can't just sort of go off of the way that somebody's statement makes the judge feel. It's basically like a board game. Litigation of any kind is like a board game. You have to follow the rules of the game. You have to take turns. You have a game piece. You can't change that. You draw cards that you get and you have to live with them, things like that. So when you're going through any type of litigation, somebody can't just go to the court and say, but this is what would be fair. This is what I think should happen. That has no legal effect. There have to be petitions filed, motions filed. And I don't really know the procedural history of this case. So I'm not totally I've tried to do a bit of just Google searching, not legal research, about it. Like, what are we waiting on? Is there a petition to end the conservatorship? And it seems like at least as of a few days ago, there was not an official petition, but that today Brittany's statement might be treated as like an oral petition.
Interesting.
Which is a little unusual, but that's kind of what I mean by, like, you don't just march into court and just plead your case, even though that's a common phrase, but you don't just say like, I think that this should happen. It's like, well, okay, that's all well and good, but you need to file something. It's all done by filings and motions and papers. That's how court works. Like, usually when people speak in court, it's at like a trial stage, like giving real evidence. And this wouldn't really be evidence. Like, there's some gaps in my understanding of what's going on here. So that's one thing.
The judge couldn't just be like in a Hallmark movie, like,
exactly.
I hereby order that the conservatorship is done. Like, Brittany is free.
Yes, that's exactly.
You're saying that that's not even at play.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Like, there's no world in which that could just happen. Like, the Latin term for the court just doing something on its own is called sua sponte. And it means,
sounds intense.
It means like the court does something on its own. So the court is allowed, like when I worked at a court, sometimes we would sua sponte dismiss a party that wasn't supposed to be in the case, but that's really extreme and rare.
I'm going to start using that in my life. Like, what are you going to do? I'm going to go for a jog. Sua sponte.
You should.
I'm going to do my own thing. Sua sponte.
Yeah. It means like on its own or I don't know actually what it means in Latin, but that's how it is used in the court system.
I'm just going to release another EP, sua sponte.
But okay, that brings me to the next point that I wanted to make about this whole thing, which is that, so this is in front of a trial court judge and it's in state court, not federal. So basically, like, the way the court system works in California is there's trial court and then there's the Court of Appeal. And then there's the California Supreme Court, kind of similar to like the federal Supreme Court and then the courts of appeal. But in any case where there's a trial judge involved, the trial judge, of course, wants to get it right, but they also don't want to get reversed. And they don't want to, not that they lose their job or something, but
can you explain like what it reversed means?
Yeah. So if a trial court judge makes a decision such as ends a conservatorship or denies a motion to end a conservatorship, then the side that's on the bad receiving end of that decision can file a notice of appeal and take it to the Court of Appeal. And at that point, you basically get to argue your whole case all over again. And it depends on the standard of review, but basically you have your chance to try again with often the Court of Appeal judges are more seasoned and they used to be trial court judges, not always, but like they tend to be a little more experienced. And so you may, and you also have a panel. So you have three different judges usually all looking at it and they decide together. So you kind of have like more minds on the issue. Whereas at the trial court, it's just one judge's discretion. Well, sometimes it's not discretionary, but anyway.
Sure.
Basically, a trial court judge is very sensitive to making not only the right decision, but the decision that will stand if the case gets appealed. And judges really generally like to preserve status quo, both for image reasons and non-reversal reasons, and because the way that our legal system is set up, it really favors status quo, it favors precedent. And in this case, I feel like that is likely been a big factor for a long time, is preserving the status quo.
Yeah.
And I think I worry that that will continue to play a big role, but I also think there's never been more pressure on this case than there is now.
I agree with you. We listened to the podcast, Even the Rich, and they did 3 episodes. They did a little cycle on Free Britney. And I thought it was really interesting how they emphasized that the temporary conservatorship being granted in the first place and then continued after however month long of a period that was, all the way back in 2007 or 2008, really set the tone for where we are right now. Like, that ruling from however long ago that the temporary conservatorship should be continued just made it, like, just legally like a pretzel for Britney to find her way out mm-hmm. of. And that's sort of the position that we find ourselves in today. And I understand, and I echo, not to sound like a youth group leader, but I do, the frustration and the hurt of so many people hearing her voice today. Lizzie and I were sitting on the couch earlier and going over her statement. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And that it got to this point is, I believe, truly just, I mean, it feels like a very, like, malevolent failure. Does that even make sense? Like, it feels like a willful act was done to her and has continued in her life. She's just been in this really strange and specific legal loophole. So, like, 2 things are sort of at mm-hmm. play. That, like, once the pieces were set up for her, she's in this tangle. And that there were also players outside of the legal system who were part of the conservatorship who stood to benefit from her not getting out of this. And, you know, it's sort of the beauty of social media. Being able to rally people would only exist in the age of, like, a Twitter hashtag, you know, to get this level of awareness and public pressure on a case that is this strange and awful.
I think that if public opinion were going to sway this outcome, it's never had a better chance than now. And I should also say, I don't know if I clarified this before, I have no experience in this area of law. It's truly like a doctor who does surgeries being asked to, like, go and be a dermatologist. Like, I do not work in that area.
It's interesting you say that, because Darren is a nurse, and as far as I'm concerned, she's Dr. House to me now. I'm sending her all my moles.
Well, I mean, she probably does, actually, more than a specialized doctor, she probably does have, like, a good, because she has to work in all different areas, and, like, she just got out of school.
That's true.
And she just got out of school, so it's all fresh. And in school, you do have to, like, learn about that type of stuff, although I don't think even in law school we really learned about conservatorships. It's just such a specific area of law.
Darling, I know that you're nervous, but trust you've got time on your side, and you are so young and so daring. Live life like there's nowhere to hide.
I know. Well, should we get into more of our main topic for today?
Today, we are talking about social anxiety post-pandemic. And not exactly, but that's part of it.
And also a little bit of what we're looking forward to.
I was thinking that it could be a fun exercise for this episode to do what I do for everyone's birthday, including my own, which is a rosebud thorn for what is coming, because it feels little by little like the world is opening up. And obviously, the vaccine rollout in all parts of the world is not where it needs to be. And it's a very slow opening up, but yet that light at the end of the tunnel has really never seemed brighter, for me at least. So with that in mind, I was thinking we could play Rosebud Thorn. Rose is the thing that you like, that is good, that is happening now, that you're enjoying. Bud is something that you're looking forward to. And thorn, though you can choose not to have a thorn, but for the purposes of this game, Lizzie and I both have thorny thorns, is something that you don't like so much. So I do this on birthdays to reflect on the year, and we are going to be doing this to reflect on what has been and what is perhaps to come as we brace ourselves for life after COVID lockdowns. I mean, lockdowns in LA just got lifted pretty recently, so that's sort of the state that we're in right now.
Yeah, I know that's not the case all over the world, and my heart definitely goes out to people that are still facing more severe lockdowns because, of course, we've been there, and it's really tough. We feel lucky to have our vaccines and to be feeling good, and I feel very safe going out and about because we are vaccinated, and everyone we personally know is, I think,
yeah,
that we get together with here, and, you know, being out in public, I probably still take a few more precautions with like carrying a mask just in case there's a weird situation or somewhere requires it, mm-hmm. and, you know, being very conscious of hand sanitizer and stuff like that. But in general, life is actually starting to feel normal again.
Yeah.
Which is...
Well, like post-COVID normal.
Yes.
Life will never be normal again. But I think specifically mask culture is evolving, and that's been sort of where we are right yeah. now. So, lady, give me a rose. What is something good right now that is happening in this season of life?
For me, I would say weekends like the one we just had. This past weekend, we were in Ojai celebrating my 30th birthday. And if you've never heard of Ojai, which I feel like outside of California, a lot of people might not have, but it's just such a beautiful little resort town, I guess I would call it. It's sort of an artist community, kind of has a hippie history. And it's just our favorite getaway. It's such a fun place to visit. And we spent a long weekend there. And I think, well, you asked me while we were there, like, what's the rosebud and thorn from the past year? And I said, honestly, the rose is this moment and being on vacation and, you know, sitting around having a cocktail, not being worried about COVID, not having to wear masks, having our vaccines, feeling good and healthy. And it's just night and day. And I think even though I look forward to like bigger trips and things, and I love getting together with people like we did for Pride, to me, it's just the carefree weekend getaway where we can go out and like enjoy good food and stuff that is so simple, but it felt so impossible for so long. So that's the rose for me. What would yours be?
I think the rose for me is a bit more introspective.
Okay.
I was pretty nervous socially about like re-entering social situations with people because we really did not see that many people for the time of lockdowns. And I am happy to report, and this is my rose, that I have been exceeding my own expectations. I hope if you are listening and you've interacted with me recently and you were like, Grace, you flunked, that was awkward and weird, then apologies. I clearly am a poor self-observer, but it seems to me that I'm exceeding my own expectations for social reintegration, I guess. I was honestly really nervous about like how I would do. And I've been happy that I've been able to find myself in conversations and not be so nervous and stressed. It's still something that I think will be an adjustment for me, but I've been really glad that it's almost like playing a sport that you grew up playing and you just didn't play for a while, but now I'm like, okay, I can do this. Because I used to be so stressed. You know how we'd have people over in the yard for like tea or something, and you would be like, oh, so-and-so's coming over, pop out and say hi, we're gonna have tea. And I would be so nervous and like stressed. I was like, I don't want to say hi. And I don't know, I would just get so in my head about it. And I'm really happy that so far, so good. We bumped into people that we weren't expecting to see in Ojai.
Yeah.
And I think I did well. Is this sad to say? Is this like a strange thing?
No, I think that's the point of this episode. Oh, okay. Is I feel like a lot of people could probably relate.
You're like, I think I did well in that conversation.
Flirt with me in quarantine. Let's act like we are heroes in a movie. Cheap vodka over tangerine. I'm losing sleep and losing new things to read.
Okay, lady, what is your bud? The thing that you are looking forward to?
I mean, it's hard because there's so much, but...
Sorry, we only have time for one.
I know. It's just like...
Whose show you think this is, but we are booked and busy. We have other guests coming on later.
No, we don't. But
Bean needs the microphone for his podcast.
Oh yeah, Bean will definitely take the mic. I just think it's hard to think of a bud because I feel like life is like this unfolding bud at the moment with like, oh wow, we can have travel. Like I actually have plane tickets booked for things later this year, which I haven't had a plane ticket booked in so long. But I think more than that, I'm really excited to cook for people more again because I love cooking for people. And every now and then I have gotten the chance. Well, in the last few weeks, we've had a couple people over that I've cooked for. But I feel like I've become a way better cook in the past year because a lot of people did during quarantine. And I was able to experiment and spend more time focusing on that than I had before. And now I'm ready to show it off. What's yours?
I'm excited for live music, both to play and to attend live shows. That is a huge bud for me. I also am really excited to have people over for dinner. One of my favorite flexes is just you cooking for people.
Well, our two buds are a little paired then.
They are. Going to shows and playing shows. It's been kind of strange to sort of launch into a different career path over quarantine that is so performance based and then not be able to do that. I have a show this weekend, I have a show next weekend, and I have a little tour coming up in November, which, by the way, if you're listening, Portland and Seattle are sold out. I'm opening up for Katie Pruitt on the Expectations tour. And the only place where I'm opening where you can still grab tickets is in Phoenix. But, and this is an exclusive to this podcast, we're planning something pretty major for Los Angeles. So if LA or California is where you are based, hold tight because I will be announcing something super cool also in November. So there it is. But if you'd like to come see me on tour with Katie Pruitt, Phoenix is the only place, and LA, but that hasn't been announced yet. But anyway, so live shows are my bud. Roundabout way. Live shows.
I figured. I'm so excited for that for you too. I almost like said that for my bud just because I'm so excited for you to be on tour. But that's your bud.
We both kind of had each other's bud. I'm excited. Like my bud, I can't wait for you to cook for other people. It's been fun when it's just been for me, but let's involve more people into that scenario. And then I will wow them with my conversation skills, which we've confirmed in the past 2 weeks are still here and fine.
Okay, what's your thorn?
The thorn.
I'm curious if we have the same or similar thorns.
I mean, the thorn has got to be, for me, missing people and just missing my family, missing my friends, and as a consequence of not seeing people, feeling like kind of a shell of myself for a while, and the need to find who I am again in social settings. I think that's something that I wish I didn't have to do, but I'm also so fortunate that I've had my health. And yeah, I mean, I think that's a thorn
for sure.
Just like every, like
the last year took a toll in a lot of ways, even for the luckiest of us, it still took a toll, and it's okay to acknowledge that.
What's your thorn?
I think that my thorn is people being left out. Like I worry for myself because, you know, there's only so many days in the week. And I'm an introvert, so I can't like get together with people all the time. I both worry that I will feel like I don't have the social stamina to do as much as I might want, and then feeling left out when I see people doing things that I either just wasn't included in or like didn't want to do because I can't go out every single day or else I'll run myself into the ground. And then on the flip side of that too, inadvertently making people feel left out. Which would never be my intention, but I feel like that is this weird sense that I'm slightly getting, like with all the joy of finally being able to see people. I'm sure there are people that feel like, well, shit, I've been inside for a year and yet I like don't really have people that I want to get together with, and like everybody's hanging out without me. And I even feel that sometimes, like, I don't think I struggle with that, like, every minute because I am an introvert. So sometimes I'm like, no, thank you for not inviting me to that because I need me time at home. Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean? It's like kind of the return of FOMO, and it's times a million because you feel like, oh, it's shot girl summer. Everyone's hanging out. Oh, well, why wasn't I included in that?
Yeah.
Like people haven't seen me in a year. Why wouldn't they want to invite me to their party?
Yeah.
And I just worry about people feeling bad. And I too sometimes have a smidge of that.
Oh, totally. I typically don't watch Instagram stories because I found that I got really in my head for FOMO reasons in ways that were unbecoming and kind of unusual to me. I'll watch Instagram stories for celebrities or for people I don't know that like aren't in my life, and for like some like core friends of mine that I know aren't going to be excluding me or something. But when Instagram stories became an option, I had to sort of like set it as a habit to not watch. And now it's like really such a habit that I don't even think about it because I just found myself spiraling because it's so easy to feel left out and excluded. And I knew that that was one thing I could do to just help me be a better friend and more present both at home, but also in my friendships and relationships, because most of the time, it's not about you. That's what I learned. Most of the time, even though it seems like it could be, it's not about you. It's not that I wasn't invited or whatever. And I was really happy to make that change. And it's still something that I pretty much do. So if you have ever noticed that I don't watch your Instagram stories and we are friends, it is truly not personal. It is super a me thing. And that's just the way it is.
No, I think that's a good boundary. Change. I do watch Instagram stories. I love getting inspiration and keeping up with people that way.
Oh, I love getting inspiration, to be clear. Like, I do watch Instagram stories, just not for people in my life, pretty much, except for, like, my core people.
Well, yeah. I know. I'm just saying that, like, I don't have that same boundary that you have. I've chosen a different kind of decision for myself on that front. But there are times when I'm like, oh, like, of course, everybody has the moment of opening an Instagram story and being like, awesome. That looks fun. No. Like, everyone has had that experience. It's a universal experience if you use social media, I think. And I guess that is kind of my thorn. It's just like social media over the past year was very interesting, where you could not post a video of getting together socially without fearing some backlash.
Yeah.
And now it's like everybody wants to go out and share what they're doing. And I think like the return of feeling excluded and FOMO and stuff is kind of a thorn.
It's a very common and understandable feeling for someone to post something once they're out and be like, look at how fine I am.
Yeah.
Don't I look really fine? Here I am with my group of friends, all of us fine. And, you know, I think I actually really understand either like the projection of that or the truly real feeling of that and wanting to express it. Even if it's sort of a fake it till you make it, man, I'm with you on that. Like, we all just got fake till we make it. So I actually thought we could end, speaking of that, the show or the segment this week with some tips on tips and tricks for how we will be introing ourselves into a post-lockdown world. And something that I wanted to offer, given that I am proud of myself socially recently. Again, I haven't received reviews on that, so let's just all take it with a grain of salt. But I've actually, you know what? I did receive a review. Remember I asked Jax when Jax was over, I was like, how am I doing conversationally? Because I'm a normal person and that's a normal thing to ask. And Jax said, well, you have talked about whales a lot, but that's just because I, at the time, was very interested in whales. So that's not weird. You know, that's it's not weird.
Okay, so what's your advice?
My advice is to be vulnerable, to use... Okay, we've all been so inside and away from people and away from conversations. So use it to your advantage to be vulnerable, to kind of be blunt, if you will. If you're in a conversation and you think it's going strangely, okay, and also please, Lizzie, you're going to have to chime in because I don't know if I'm giving strange advice because this is just what I do. If you're in a conversation, you think it's going a little bit weird, I would just recommend acknowledging it. Like, we all now have kind of the superpower of, like, we've had time to evaluate social settings and contracts and prescriptions that maybe never fit for us in the first place. And now we can kind of have a clean slate and make some of our own rules. And that's what I've been doing. So if I'm in a conversation and I think that maybe I did something weird, like I talked about whales too much, I can pause and I can be like, Jax, honestly, I feel a little strange socially with everything that we've gone through. How am I doing? Is this okay? Almost like, I don't know, it's almost like asking consent in a conversation of like, is this okay to proceed with? Because sometimes I just get to in my head after I'd leave and then I'd have a lot of social anxiety. Like, I really talked about whales too much. That was way too much whales. And if I ask in the moment, we can at least address it. We can address the awkwardness. The vulnerability sort of breeds a more natural connection. And it's very freeing to admit, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And if you are talking to someone who's like, but I do, run. That person is lying to you.
Yeah.
Ted Bundy vibes.
I do think that's really good advice.
Really?
It takes the power out of the awkward silence or stiltedness. It's just, I think it's one of the rare times in life that we genuinely can all relate to an experience.
Yep.
Like, even the weather, you could be like, yeah, so it's been hot. Like, oh no, man, I just flew in today from somewhere cold. Like, but there is nobody on earth that cannot relate to the experience of going through the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I think it's okay to say the elephant in the room.
Yes, that, I think that's a concise way of that.
One piece of advice I would give that I've been implementing sometimes is be really conscious of alcohol. If you drink, which I'm sure a lot of people don't at all, which good for you. If you're nervous going into a social setting, consider deciding ahead of time that you're not going to drink. And every time I've gone into something feeling like, what's the conversation going to be? I feel a little weird. Like, I hope I don't get a little tipsy and say something and trip over my words and feel dumb about it the next day, I realize that I can 100% avoid that by deciding I'm actually not going to drink tonight. And every single time I've ever made that decision in a social setting, I've been so glad the next day that I didn't drink. Mm. I would say over the past year, I would consider myself like sober curious, I think is what people say. I did not make that term.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kind of like when people say like bi curious or something, it's like sober curious.
Strange.
I am not sober. Like, I drink wine a good amount and stuff, but I have like spent more prolonged intentional periods of time not drinking than I have in my adult life over the past year. And I've noticed a huge improvement in terms of like social anxiety and anxiety in general. So that's my maybe unexpected but very serious tip. Well, I think that's all the advice we have. We're still very much figuring it out, so our advice is a little bit limited at the moment. Let us know if you have any
advice.
Our advice
is maybe don't take our advice.
I mean, take it with.
But we'd love to hear yours. You can always write to us at underourroofpod@gmail.com, and we're due for another mailbag episode.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something that we have in the running. We're also due for another true crime episode. So if you would like to write with us with perhaps a true crime suggestion and or your rose buds and thorns for this post-lockdown life, please reach out. Also, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. We're an independent podcast, so it really helps us out. Share us with a friend, tag us on social media. We love to hear that you're listening, and we love spending this time with you.
Thanks so much, and have a great week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Remember when my mom was like, goodbye?
I know.
So come here, my darling, come here.